Thanks for the introduction, Jamie. First of all, what is tapramazone? Tapramazone, as with any herbicide in the market today, started as an ag product. The product on the left that you see in the green bottle is called Armazon. It's focused in the corn industry. You see, the labeling system in the ag side seems to be better than the turf side, but it has a large, nice 27 on it, saying that it's a group 27, which also indicates that it is an HPPD inhibitor. The product on the right is Pilex, also tapramazone. It was introduced several years after, once they had a good run-in with time through the corn industry. Since this is a turf grass presentation, I'm going to focus on Pilex. As I said, from the Armazon, the tapramazone is an HPPD inhibitor. What it does is it targets the enzyme p-hydroxyphenylpyruvate dioxygenase, and that's where the HPPD acronym comes from. This affects the carotenoid pathway, biosynthesis pathway of the plant. And what that does is during the process of photosynthesis, the carotenoid actually acts as a storage facility for excess energy that chlorophyll makes. But with tapramazone, actually breaks the carotenoid down and renders it useless. So the excess energy is kind of free to float around the cell. And what happens is the chlorophyll in the cell gets destroyed. When the chlorophyll is destroyed, it effectively bleaches out, rendering the process of photosynthesis useless, and then the plant dies. Some of the benefits of tapramazone are that it is able to suppress and control some very difficult grassy weed species. It doesn't offer a different mode of action for turf grass managers. It can be applied at very low application rates, and due to its caution label, it can be described as being environmentally safe. Unfortunately, some of the disadvantages, as with any herbicide, it does have potential for turf grass injury. And also, due to our research, it offers some current labeling and registration issues. In this picture here, this is kind of one of those wow factor pictures. When you spray tapramazone, you get this nice bronzing, bleaching effect on the turf grass. And for any turf grass manager, you would say this is a no-go. In golf, in sod farm, in athletic field, someone goes and sprays that on your facility, you're gonna be like, what in the world? And you probably would ask, why would you even want to consider spraying something that may have this effect? I think in areas such as right-of-ways or roadsides where appearance isn't as big of an issue, it may could get away with it. But if you can find a way to safeguard the effects of this while also benefiting from the removal of some of the weed species, you could really make a big difference. This is just a tidbit of the label for Pilex. I've highlighted one little section basically saying don't spray this on anything this warm season. Centipede grass is left out of this. Overall, this product is extremely safe on cool season grasses, focusing on Kentucky bluegrass, tall fescue, perennial ryegrass. There is also marginal tolerance on creeping bendgrass. And like I said, warm season turf grass that is labeled is centipede grass currently. We're trying to get the labeling system changed for this so we're able to use it. That's the benefit of our research. One of the properties that I mentioned earlier of tapramazone is it does control some of those hard-to-control grassy weed species. Goosegrass, crabgrass, nimblewill, Dallas grass, Bermuda grass, and foxtails. And I want to highlight two of them, goosegrass and Bermuda grass. And the problem is that Bermuda grass is one of the grasses that is something that you want, but you're trying to remove something that you don't want. Goosegrass options of removal are very, very limited right now, so we're trying to find another viable option. This is a good picture of a goosegrass plant, Eleusin indica. You can see that it's a very mature plant. A good indicator of a plant for ID purposes is the center. You see the white bulbous center with the the stems or the arms coming off in a wagon wheel-like appearance. This plant right here is definitely very difficult to kill, especially at this state of the game. But as I said, what are some of the options that you have to control goosegrass at this point? A short list of some of the options is diclofenamethyl, 4-M sulfuron, metribuzin, mesotrione. MSMA comes in many different names. Speed zone, sulfentrazone, tepramazone, and oxidiazone. Unfortunately, diclofenamethyl was removed from the market recently. MSMA was also, it might as well have been removed, but it's been so heavily restricted, especially for golf course situations, that only a small percentage of the acreage is available to be used on. I believe it's 10% or less of the acreage of the golf course they're allowing to be applied to per year. We're seeing also with oxidiazone, we've seen some resistance to goosegrass in these situations. I heard yesterday that there is speed zone has also been resistant. Some species around, I believe, Georgia. So what that means is the options that you have are very, very limited. With 4-M sulfuron, the other ones that are on the list, metribuzin, mesotrione, speed zone again, sulfentrazone. These five, you really have to focus on the early life cycle of these plants. You want to try and get them as young as possible if you miss that pre-emergent window. But they don't work as well the older the plant gets, the more mature it gets. The control rate is much, much less. With the tepramazone, that may not be the case. You get the early control, but you also get some late plant control as well. Some research that we're doing subsequent and concurrent with this is a goosegrass control study. I unfortunately can't go through the data of that today, but if you're interested, we have found that really low rates of tepramazone and sequential applications for larger plants has been very, very effective. The research shows to be very promising. Please stop by tomorrow evening, 4 to 6. My poster session is upstairs, and the number is 1115. And again, I go back to the same slide. This is a picture. The point of our research is to try and take this plant at this stage, turn it into this, where the plant is bleached out, and we want to try and follow that with necrosis or total death of that plant, while also leaving the suitable grass around it healthy or able to recover. So going into that, the objective of our research was to determine whether various additives may help safen tepramazone use on Bermuda grass. And we try to do that by looking at the reduction of bleaching symptoms as well as the reduction of resulting injury. Experimental design that was used is a randomized complete block design. 8 treatments with 4 applications were used. Plot size was 1.5 by 3 meters. Turf species was Tifway 419. Soil type of the area was Marvin Sandy Loam. Soil pH was 5.9. And the location was here at the Auburn Turfgrass Research Unit, highlighted right there on the red rectangular box. The treatments were used in the left-hand column. They all pretty much exactly the same. 12.3 grams AI per hectare of tepramazone was used. It was mixed with 0.5% volume to volume of MSO. In the right-hand column is more of the interesting part of the research, the additives that were used. It was tepramazone alone. We also used triclopyr added in with tepramazone, green turf pigment, green turf paint, ammonium sulfate, and chelated iron. And just to use it as another standard, triclopyr was used by itself. For the table you see here, all of the statistics were used using PROG GLM, means for separated, using Fisher's protected LSD of 0.005. You see in the first column, let's see if I can use this thing here. You see in the first column here, there's really not much significant difference. In the second column, the injury sort of falls off, but you see down here, as you would expect, tepramazone and triclopyr has a little bit higher injury and it's sort of holding on where the others are sort of to peter off. And then 3 weeks after, there's really not that much injury associated, but still that injury is still a little bit higher than normal. With injury, normally you look at 20% as being the cutoff. Normally you look at as injury being 20% as the cutoff for acceptable. But you see, with these numbers, the injury was all acceptable for the whole trial. And that information going into a graph with a line form, this was used made using signal plot. On the x-axis, you see 5, 11, and 20 days after treatment. On the y, you see injury percentage. Non-treated was left out of this graph as it was just a line right across the bottom. But you see, as the data from the previous slide showed, the purple line here, you see that higher injury where, as opposed to the other, it's sort of like a trend line starting between 10 and 20%, moving down to zero. Also, on this y-axis, this normally would be 100%, but because all of our injury was below 30, we moved it from a 0 to 30% scale. On this slide, this is the one that's a little bit more important. Because you see here, right here, the bleaching percentage was much lower with the dipramazone triclopyr mixture, and some of these other ones are right around 20%, a little bit higher, a little bit lower. But in the second column, this is the real big wow factor right here. You see dipramazone and chelated iron, when you add them together, it's down to 1%, where the others are between 75 and 85% respectively. At 20 days after, just about all the treatments are just zeroed out. No bleaching symptoms are still shown. Again, with this one, bleaching percentage on the y-axis, but this one does go all the way to 100 days after treatment on the x. And you see down here, this is the one right here, the chelated iron. You see how huge significant difference between here and here. Big separation. That's a really big key of our research. With this slide, this actually shows some of the plots from the work. 5 days after, you see a little bit of the injury. You're not seeing very much bleaching from the triclopyr. You wouldn't expect non-treated. You're not seeing much bleaching at this point, but you're not really seeing much injury. It's just a bleaching symptom. Going into 11 days after treatment, you still see your non-treated here. But the thing is that I want to point out is right here, this one. You can see a big difference. Less than 2 weeks after, big change. There's a lot of green material here as well, and you can see that. But what that's showing is coxcomb calinga, that it's not being controlled. 20 days after treatment, nothing. It's all gone. Everything's recovered fully. For the results. Overall, dipramazone and chelated iron resulted in less injury than the other treatments and reduced the bleaching symptoms on the Bermuda grass. Conclusions, the data suggest that the addition of chelated iron to the mixture of dipramazone and MSO may act as a safener on Bermuda grass. And for future research, different rates of iron sulfate and different formulations will be further researched. The addition of different micronutrients could also be tested for potential safening effects. And the relationship between iron and the 4-HTPD pathway will be investigated more thoroughly. I'd like to acknowledge my advisor, Dr. Scott McElroy, William Head, Dr. McCullough at UGA, and our sponsor, Kathy Camwis, for their funding sources. And with that, any questions?
We have time for one question.
Yes, sir.
Adam, maybe you said, maybe I missed it. What was the goosegrass control data like with iron in your tank mix?
I'm not allowed to say today because I don't have time. There's a lot, and I'd love for you to come by and look at the pictures on the poster. They're very clear, and I'd be happy to give you all the time you want.
Okay. Can you tell me what chelated iron source you use?
It's a chelated iron product that BASF makes. It's called Sprint 330. Any other questions?
There's a lot of interest. You'll probably have them in.
That's good.